This is Ben Goujon with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I'm talking art with fiber artist Luis Papageorge, whose work will be on display at the Quad City Arts Rock Island Gallery, June 27th through August 8th. Luis, welcome to Talking Art.
Hi, Ben. Thank you. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you in town. You've come here from Michigan. Mm-hmm. You also have roots in Chicago.
Yes.
And are coming here, and your work's on display at the Quad City Arts Gallery till August 8th. And I have to say, seeing your work in person versus looking at your website and seeing the photos, like, it's epic.
Oh, thank you. Epic. It's never been described like that before.
You know, it's one of those great things about artwork like yours. And you are a fiber artist,
yes.
But you work with a lot of mediums. Seeing it in person and seeing those textures and the depth of the work is always so revelatory and so much more impressive. Tell us about your work and how you kind of started working with fiber.
I've worked with fiber a long time, and you know, since I was a kid, I always was sewing, and my mother knitted, and my grandmother knitted and crocheted and did all that. So, you know, I learned that stuff as a kid, and it's just sort of ingrained in you. And when I went to art school, I went to the Art Institute in Chicago, and I went as a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there were so many chemicals and everything that I wasn't able to paint. And it's not like now where they have, you know, things that are pretty inert and benign that you can use solvents and things like that.
Sure.
It was real stuff.
Yeah.
And very toxic. So, you know, I kind of floundered around a little bit, and then I found weaving and fabric printing. The fabric printing wasn't really in my wheelhouse at all, but mm-hmm. I learned how to weave very simple things on a loom and started weaving with magnet wire. So I had a whole series of work that I did probably for about 10 years that was all woven wire, and they're very sort of iridescent and big, you know, pretty decent big scale. And it was really beautiful. And then all of a sudden, one day I was like, I cannot do this anymore. I just feel like it's just all, once you figure out how to put it on the loom, it's all process, and you just sit there and you do that.
Sure.
And it's just like, so, it was so boring and mind bending. I was just like, I cannot do this anymore. So I started using old lace and things, because I was looking at that, and you know how your grandmother, they always had doilies and
yeah,
and all these beautiful things, but they were out of fashion, and
right.
And so there was a lot of it available, and it was really, really beautiful, and I thought, you know, this needs to be elevated into something more than just a background foil for other objects to sit on top, or dishes, or whatever. And so I started playing with that and stiffening it and wiring it and then wiring it together and taking it from being a background object to a sculptural object. And that kind of walks the line between fine art and craft. And
right.
Using the metallic finishes and the imitation gold leaf and everything kind of refers back to sculpture, which is more in the fine art category, mostly done by men,
mm-hmm.
and as opposed to like craft things like ceramics and weaving and lace making and things like that, which were more on the craft side. And I wanted to blend the two and sort of make a statement about the fact that these were executed by, you know, pedestrian people, but they're so incredibly beautiful. And
yeah.
That's kind of how I started. And then I wanted to expand the scale. And all the lace that you can find is small. And I'm not a great crocheter or a lace maker or anything. So I started just knitting big pieces of fabric and crocheting big pieces of fabric and stiffening those and wiring those and putting metallic finishes on those and using patina solutions. And so it is very sculptural to me.
Yeah.
And comes off the wall and makes a statement about that. I have done some three-dimensional things in textiles, but typically it's using the architecture of the wall to bring that forward. And that almost is like a tabletop or something, sure, just sort of flipped on its side.
Well, and that's what I love so much about the work is that it does have that sculptural quality to it. And it is three-dimensional in, you know, the way you've got it set up. And I love the dichotomy of the softness of those fabrics and those textiles. And then, as you were saying, like, you incorporate a lot of metallic finishes on them. And, you know, looking through your website, there's lots of works that incorporate metal or wood in with that fabric. So you've got this great kind of blend of hard and soft, natural versus man-made, that it says a lot when you see it and when you, you know, are able to sit in the gallery and look at it and experience it. You know, it kind of runs this whole gamut of different feelings about the work.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of led you to that? And you talked about growing up sewing but kind of bringing that hard sculptural edge into it. What was the inspiration behind that, I guess?
I think, kind of as I said before, I wanted to make a statement about the fact that that is art, you know, fine art.
Yeah.
And by removing it from its utilitarian first principle, I guess you could call it, and making it into a sculptural piece, it's saying that this is the same as anything done by, you know, our male counterparts, because it is a bit of a feminist statement, and all my work, yeah, I think, deals with that. And so I just found that was a really good way to do it, because you have this very, and it's very feminine. I mean, lace is very feminine, and all, yeah, those things are very feminine, and they move in a very organic way. And so to bring that in and say, okay, this is the same as the fine art sculpture that, you know, has been sort of dominated by men over the centuries, and mm-hmm, even now, you know, you still find that that's still happening. And so I just wanted to do that. And I've also started making some of them into bronze. And when you do that, it's completely changes it. It's like the phoenix from the flames, because, sure, you're taking this very feminine work and then you're turning it into an actual sculpture that's made of bronze and metal and patinas and working, right, in the same way with those structures and forms that fine artists use in a foundry.
Yeah,
and I just think that's so fun.
Well, and I think it speaks so much to, you know, obviously we have very, very longstanding old stereotypes of the softness of femininity and the hardness of male. But looking at your work takes me back to thinking about, like, the Depression era and, like, photos you see of women in the Depression era, when it's like, these were hard women. They were, you know, because life was so hard then, like, that femininity was not maybe as apparent. But I look at your work and I think about that sort of time period where, you know, like, frontier women of, like, we're tough. Like, yes, we're going to sew the clothes for the women or for the kids, but we're also going to kill the bear when it comes to our house, you know? And, like, that is being a person, you know? It's not about, to me, like, being a male or a female, like, but you have to have, there are elements of all things in all of us. You, mm-hmm, know, I think we, mm-hmm, are sometimes constricted by society of what we feel we can present, you know, but I think that your work shows that dichotomy of like, we've all got this in us, these multiple sides, you know, which is very exciting, I think.
And I think that just conceptually, cloth is part of our evolutionary history.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for, you know, spinning thread and, you know, shearing sheep and, you know, pounding flax and all the things that we make cloth woven structures or knitted structures or whatever they are, is the reason we evolved, because we could stay warm and we had clothes. And it
right.
was such an important thing when it was all done, when it was handiwork that women actually did. Men,
right.
you know, at least in our society, men didn't spin cloth or, you know, weave. In other societies, that's not the case. But here it was, you know, women would be traveling on horseback, even wealthy women, and they would be spinning thread because it was so, you needed so much all the time.
Right.
And clothing itself and cloth structures were extremely precious.
Yeah, and I always think back, you know, I go to Joann Fabric and buy a spool of thread.
Yeah, right.
You know, the work 200 years ago of getting that amount of thread was incredible.
Right.
You know, and now I'm paying $2.99 or whatever for
it. It's polyester and, you know, it's not made of anything.
Yeah.
Cool.
With your fabric choices, when you're doing that, like kind of what are the things that you consider when you're choosing a fabric for a piece, and kind of, I guess, how far down the fabric lineage are you going when you're creating it?
Well, the last large scale pieces that I did, which are those big sort of gold metal or metal leaf textiles
yes.
that are kind of burned and really distressed looking. Some of that was made with hemp, but there's a big portion of it that was made with hand-spun raw silk. And it was just so beautiful. You know, I look at that and I go, oh, my God, you know, this is so beautiful. And it would be a beautiful texture. And when you knit it and crochet it, because it's not an even thread, it just makes this beautiful, beautiful textile. And so I made some of these textiles, you know, just like big runs of cloth. And then I hung it up and I was like, well, that looks really finished and pretty.
Yeah.
But it didn't make a statement about anything. So I took a real leap and I took a torch and I burned it. and I was like, this is it. This is where, you know, what works. And it creates a textile that has sort of a historical, archaeological feeling, like it could have been taken out of a tomb of someone, or it could have been buried in a box for,
yes.
you know, 100 years. And, you know, it comes out and it's got holes, but it's still really beautiful because there's, you know, the gold on it or whatever it was made with. And I just think that that's, you know, that kind of refers back to the fact that we've made these cloths for hundreds of years and that they are precious, and that's where the gold and the metallics come in too, you know, on cloths that I make.
Yeah.
Because it just claims them as these really magical things that they are.
Well, and it says I had not thought about that idea of them being unearthed before, but it's so accurate, you know. And I think about my wife and I both, we enjoy going to estate sales and that sort of thing. And we live in such a society now that is so much of the things we consume are made to be thrown away. You know, then everything's disposable. But when you find those pieces that have life and history and age to them, like, that's so exciting,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you see those natural patinas that, you know, maybe a piece of metal has that as it's aged, and you're like, that is so gorgeous. And you're creating those in a way that does it. It tells you you get a feeling of the history of those pieces and the material and, you know, kind of telling this story. And you talked in your artist statement about the idea of the drawing of threads, mm-hmm. you know, and drawing generations together. I love that, you know, and I think your pieces really speak to that, that history within them.
Well, it's good. I'm really happy that you see that in there, you know, because it's kind of intentional.
Yeah.
And, you know, and everybody experiences things in their own way. And for that to happen where my intention actually comes through to the viewer is great. And I really like that. So.
Well, and that's always the challenge as an artist, right?
Right.
Like, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm presenting. I hope people get it.
Yeah.
Or not. Sometimes it's just about that experience.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it has to do with who you are as a person and what your experiences are, too. So, you know, people will look at my work and it was funny. I was part of a critique group in Chicago, and everybody looked at those open crochet structures, and they're like, "Oh, we want to try these on."
Yeah.
You know, so there is a really big clothing reference to it, even though it doesn't look like actual clothing. It could be like a robe or just divergent pieces of cloth that were
sure.
brought together in some museum archive.
Yeah. Thinking about your history, and you spoke about, you know, kind of growing up sewing and knitting with your mother and your grandmother. Was there also the art side of it in your family, or how did you have a history of artists outside of that craft?
No.
What brought you to art?
I love to make things.
Yeah.
I love to make things. And I specifically love textiles. And but I never thought of, you know, my experience. I mean, I didn't grow up in a cultured family or anything. So
sure.
my experience wasn't like, oh, you know, you could make art out of that. It was just sort of you made clothes or you made functional utilitarian objects. And then when I wasn't able to paint, I was like, you know, what am I going to do? But the Art Institute had a great textile department. And so I just thought, well, I'll go mess around with that. And it was just sort of clicked.
Sure.
And then I started doing it. And, you know, from the weaving of the wire, which is all metallic, it went into, you know, creating structures that then had metallics applied to them and then making larger pieces. And so it was an evolution really to where it's come to now. And I think that the things that I'm creating now make a much more powerful statement because of scale and things than the small works that I started out with, even though I really love those and they're very intimate and beautiful. I think it's much more impactful to stand about in front of a textile that's as big as you are and bigger.
Right. Right.
So, you know, like the ancient tapestries, you know, that they made in the
yeah.
1600s, 1500s and things like that. It's like, oh, whoa.
Yeah. You know? They're huge. Some of
yeah.
those just enormous ones.
Yeah.
And again, like whenever I see those, I can't help but think about the hundreds and thousands of hours that
yeah.
went into those pieces, you know, and someone plotted that out and planned that. And
mm-hmm.
it's really amazing. Where do you start? Like, what is your inspiration for, like, you're working on a new piece. What is that process like for you? Like, are you looking, kind of constantly looking for just a piece of fabric or something that sparks an interest, or
sometimes it's just like I'll see some thread or like
yeah.
like with the pieces that are at the art center, I found this beautiful hand spun raw silk. And I was like, this is just so cool. So then I'd make little pieces and experiment and, you know, then make something bigger. And or sometimes I would just make something big and see what happens and then, you know, burn it.
Sure.
So it's, you know, there's a lot of things that come into play. But I think, like, once I started using the hand-spun silk, I just love the texture. I liked everything about it. And so then you make one thing and then you make something else. And then there's another thread or something that you could combine with it that makes sense just for different textures and things. And they almost, you know, those pieces to me almost become like landscapes too.
Yeah.
Because I'd really like to make something that covered, you know, a 30-foot wall that just continued and continued and continued.
Sure.
And yeah.
And then I
need thousands of knitters.
Well, there was some project I saw lately that was just this huge scale kind of knit or crochet sort of thing. And that's, I love large scale thing. Like, I've always been very attracted to things that are very either like monolithic or, you know, I hear about, I'm a theater person and I hear about theater productions that are like, this is a 24-hour production of XYZ. And I'm like, I'm in. Like, I love that scale and that scope of artworks.
Well, it overwhelms you.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like you when you have something that's small and intimate, you know, you have to be close to it and you have it evokes specific feelings. But when you take an entire wall or something, you know, that's, or make something that's 20 feet wide, it's big. And you can't, you almost can't encompass looking at the whole thing all at one time.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, there's different textures or colors or whatever it is. And you really have to walk by it and experience each part as sort of like a little intimate part of it. But yet when you step away from it and experience it as a whole, it's overwhelming. And it's really cool when that happens.
Yeah, and it makes me think of, like, I remember the first time I went to MoMA and saw one of, like, Jackson Pollock's really large-scale pieces. And, like, you've seen photos of them before. But then you go and stand in front of it, and you do have that overwhelmed feeling because there's so much depth, because there's so much detail in every, you know, square inch of that. And that was what really... From just having seen the photos of your work to actually seeing your work in person yesterday was so like, oh, wow, there's so much larger than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much detail in every little piece of it, you know, and you really get to stand and experience the art and kind of dive in that way. So I just really appreciated that.
Good. And I think the fact that, you know, it's very hard to photograph the metallic sort of sparkliness of the gold. And in there's one piece in there that it's kind of an open crochet, sort of like squares,
yeah,
called Regalia.
Yeah.
And I've made a lot of those pieces in the past. And then... I started putting glitter on them. So if you walk by that one, you'll like see little glitter things as you go by. And it's so pedestrian to do that. I was just like, this is crazy, but I'm going to do it. And it's really kind of fun and pretty. And
well, and that's so fun. Like, when you're making art, I find, and I, you know, I loved you talked about just the act of creation and loving to create. But being able to have that freedom to explore, like, what's the thing that's going to go on here that's next? You know, I always find I have dabbled in painting. I'm not a painter, but I've dabbled and tried my hand at it. And it's that, like, knowing when to edit and knowing when to stop.
That's the hardest part. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to paint this on here. And then you're like, nope, that was the wrong choice because the thing that was there before You know, you can't get it back. No, you can't get it back.
You can't get it back.
You know, that's, I think with, especially with visual arts, like as a theater artist, I can try something in a rehearsal. And if it goes bad, I just say, yeah, we're not doing that again. Let's go back to the other thing. But as a visual artist, like that record stays on the piece mm-hmm. in some way. And whether you change it or not, there's still some sort of record of that there.
Yeah.
You know,
when you burn a hole in a piece of cloth, you can't put it back.
No, you can't. And so then as an artist, it's your job to like, oh gosh, is this something that I've got to completely scrap? Or how can I salvage this?
And when you have to do that, you discover things that you would not have had the opportunity had you just, you know, sort of thought about like, oh, I could do this or I could do this. It's out of necessity.
Right.
That you actually find something new a lot of times. And it's like, oh, gosh, that's so fun.
Yeah. And I think of art a lot of times as problem solving,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that speaks to that of like you're looking at this work and you're like, there's lots of problems here. How do I fix them? Mm-hmm. And that's what I find so exciting about being an artist is that creative problem solving.
Yeah.
And here's this thing that's not working or not doing what I want it to do.
But that's life in general, you know, and
yeah.
That's very reflective in every creative process is that, you know, you're always stepping into a situation where you're like, oh, how do I fix that? How does this, you know, how do I make this better? How do I make this meal that I screwed up? You know, can I put something
yeah.
in there that's gonna make it wonderful?
Well, that's like the, well, put too much chili powder in that. No coming back.
Yeah,
there.
Right. No coming back. Right. Yeah, that's a hard one.
The hot sauce went a little too much more than I thought it was going to. But it is, you know, and we've talked on this podcast before about the fact that how many of, and mostly in an education sense, of the importance of arts education being that, how much it encourages problem solving. And what a broad scale skill that is,
mm-hmm.
that is applicable in any walk of life.
Yeah.
And that the arts just really help channel that problem solving aspect to whatever you go into.
That's true. And you're always, as an artist, I think, stepping outside the box, you know, the parameters
yeah.
that have been set. And that's kind of your job.
Right.
And so no matter what you do in the rest of your life, that transfers there. It's sort of like, you know, it's created in your brain and there's all these little attachments that just make you do that no matter what kind of situation you're in.
Yeah. And how did you start your art? You know, I enjoy talking about the business side of the arts as well. Like, and I think it's always a challenge for young artists that may be listening, how you made that transition from like art school to I'm an artist and I make art and people pay me to do it. You know, because
well,
I think
people don't always pay you to do it.
They don't, but that's always kind of the hardest, you know, one of the hardest things about being an artist is, you know, there's very rarely any guaranteed income and you're
yeah.
out there creating work. What has that journey been like for you? And kind of...
That is still an ongoing process. It
yeah.
is, that's the hardest part. You know, we all want to be in our studios and sit there and just have like somebody come to the door and go, oh yes, your work's so fabulous. We just want it. and it's that, I don't know that I'm real successful at doing that. I mean, I do sell a lot of my art. I don't, luckily, you know, have like a big stash of it in some, you know.
Right.
Storage facility or something, but it's always a challenge. And gallery people and people who sell your work are not always receptive and nice to artists, even though, you know, without us, who are you?
Right.
And it's, I don't know, I find that very challenging.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What makes a gallery, for lack of a better word, good? Like, as an artist, what are you looking for out of a gallery or a gallerist who's out there trying to sell your art? Like, yes, they want to show it and they want people to come in and look at it, but at the end of the day,
well, thing I think is important that artists don't get to do that often is, and that's why this show at the Quad City Art Center is really nice, even though it's a two-person show. You know, there's a lot of my work there, and there's a lot of the other artists' work there as well. And I think it's very important to see work in context. And, you know, like you'll see that in a museum show because you have a retrospective of, you know, the work that an artist has done.
Sure.
And, you know, but for not famous artists, you don't get to do that. And it's that, I think, is a really important aspect of what galleries should do. And they don't always do it because, you know, of economics or whatever. But it's really fabulous when you can go and your work is out of the studio and a lot of it is put into a situation where it relates to itself. You know, it has a conversation with all the other work that you've done. And people get to see that and experience it and see the evolution of your process or a body of work that that communicates together, whatever, you know, you choose to do. And I think that's a really important thing for a gallery to do. And because you're kind of educating the public.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that's one thing we talk about at Quad City Arts a lot is, you know, there is that, not that the public is not intelligent, but there is an education about the artists and their work and their history and about the importance of arts, you know, and, you know, you want to be able to meet people where they are, you know, whether a consumer or an artist, but helping them and supporting them however is appropriate for that person, you know, to be able to engage with the art in the way that they're comfortable with, you know, because everyone's got a different filter and a different lens that they're looking at something through.
And, you know, because art has really stepped out of being, you know, just visual, there's a lot of conceptual things that you would just as a pedestrian have no way of understanding. And half the time as an artist, I don't know, I don't always understand it either, you know, and I think of it as a visual, it's a visual medium, it's a visual communication. And when that falls off for me, that's really hard to see too, you know, where even though there's a lot of conceptual pieces and things that I love, I find that, you know, we're calling it a visual art for a reason. And your response to that is because of the visual thing that you're experiencing. And so that's kind of the job of art centers and galleries is to educate artists too and everybody else, because there's unless you study art, unless you really go into the guts of it, you don't know what people are talking about and you don't know how to understand that and why that's considered art or why it's not considered art. And, you know, just the whole woven together stuff of art.
Yeah. And I think that so often, like, and we were talking earlier about people responding to your work and picking up what you are trying to achieve, like it can be very easy sometimes with art to get lost in the academia of the art.
Yeah.
When, you know, most of the public is not in the academia of art. So, like, how are we meeting them at that level of, I walked in and know nothing, and here's a piece. And how do I respond to that?
And some, a lot of times, you know, you see something that's visually beautiful and then you or stimulating or whatever it is to you at that moment, and then you want to find out more about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't particularly, and I probably shouldn't even say this, but I don't particularly want to know what it is conceptually before I experience it, because I want to experience it as this visual medium that it is. And then if I'm really interested or perplexed or something happens, then I want to go and read about it. And yeah. Then I want to find out about it. And I think that's a really great thing.
Yeah. We touched earlier on, that idea of showing an artist's full body of work. Digging through your website, I found a work that was completely different than everything else on your website. And it was a collage book, for lack of a better word, called Tina. When was that created?
I can't remember exactly. Was it probably about 20 years ago.
Sure.
And it, as a lot of things do with art, came out of experience that I had. And I had been working on doing a lot of collage with women's magazines and just sort of cutting things out and looking at these women's magazines, and I'm just like, I just can't believe that this is still where we are, where you have sure. to get married and you got to get the guy and you got to do this and you got to, and it's all about feeding into this like these norms that we've created especially for women. I mean, I don't think men are quite as affected by it because they're not bombarded with this all the time. It's all right. about beauty and marriage and children and fitting into the box of what you're supposed to be. So I was looking at a lot of different things in women's magazines, and I was just like, gosh, we have come so far and we have not come anywhere near where we need to be. And so I was making these different collages and things, and then I started with that book, and it was a very cathartic experience.
Yeah.
And it was.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
You can go on my website and look at it and read it there.
Yeah, I'll throw out your website when we do the outro. But okay. it was so different from everything else on your website. With the media you were using and the form, and such a strong piece, and you can flip through the whole thing on the website. And I was like, this is just, it's fascinating.
It's very intense.
It is very intense. So I encourage you to go check out Tina on Louise's website.
There was another piece that was kind of made in conjunction with that kind of, I think it was probably before I actually did that book, but it's not on the website, but it's a woman's head. Mm-hmm. And then I collaged this tongue that was sticking out over here, and then on there is a little head with blood coming off of it. And the title of it was, I Just Wanted a Little Head. And that kind of like, flips the sexuality of women right. and men, and just, throws a wrench in the works. And a lot of the other stuff that I did that's not on there from that period, that's what I yeah. was working with a lot.
Yeah, and you have that, you said earlier that feminism that runs through all your yeah. work of like, it's not all soft and lace. That's in there.
Well, that was a little bit more in your face
than
what it is now with lace and fabric.
But it's still there, uh-huh. Like that message is still there.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I was just blown away when I saw the artwork hung and live. And I hope everyone gets a chance to get down and see it. It's all at the Quad City Arts Gallery in downtown Rock Island. And that's going to be on display through August 8th. Louise, thank you so much for coming today and having a chat with me and for bringing your artwork to the Quad Cities.
Oh, thank you. This is really a pleasure. Yeah, I really appreciate you letting me talk about my work and, the evolution of it. And that's great.
Yeah, we're excited.
And thank you to the Quad City Arts Center for doing that too and having my work there.
Yeah, so come on down and check it out in person. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Art. Thanks as always to Quad City Bank and Trust, our producer Mark. And for more info on Louise, you can visit her website, www.louisepapageorge.com, or you can check out the exhibit at www.quadcityarts.com. I'm Ben Goujon, and this was Talking Art.